judging recording them.
I know. I'm debating if I want this recorded because we have a small group and it's kind of a touchy issue. So I think we'll record the part that I when I open this discussion.
Okay, I'll turn it off after.
Are you sitting here?
Yeah. I'm sitting in it.
Can I trust you to do that?
Yeah, sure.
Great, thank you so much. What's your name?
Rena,
thank you. Okay.
Great hair, Rena. Thank you.
So, are you going to be, can they hear me also, or are you just taking pictures?
It's video, but it's really just for, call like a B-roll. It's going to be under, like, something, so.
Okay, fine.
Is that okay?
I guess so.
You'll probably just be.
I'm really camera shy. Did anyone notice I'm not the one that gets up and stands there? That's what I hired Elisa Beulah for. So I can lecture and I like to give talks, but not in front of like hundreds of people and never in front of men. So, okay. Yeah, somebody came in and doubled. I'm going to turn it off for the discussion part, okay?
That's fine.
Okay, so mental health issues in the family. So people asked, why am I talking about mental health issues in the family in a Kirov conference? And that's because I'm a counselor, and I work with everybody. Everybody knows I do the follow-up work, and I get calls all the time. And one of the issues that comes up a lot are mental health issues. Mental health issues come up a lot, how to recognize them, how to deal with them. So that's what we're going to be talking about. Okay, so the first thing is, one of the reasons that mental health issues is something that comes up so much in these kinds of things is because people don't know a lot about mental health issues. It's kind of a taboo, stigmatized kind of topic. People don't know a lot about it, and therefore a lot of times what happens is that they get out of hand. And one of the things is, I believe it's really important to know how to recognize mental health issues immediately so that you can deal with them. Okay, and I just want to say this because this could be, I was thinking about it when they first started, I thought this could be such a depressing talk. I said, I don't want this to be a depressing talk. I want to give people also like a gisha, which I feel is the proper gisha towards mental illness, which is that it's like any other nisayon or life's challenges. Everyone has life's challenges. Everyone has nisyonos. And just like everybody's nisayon is hard, but Hashem sends it to them, there are things that we can learn and grow from our nisyonos. So mental illness is in the same way. And I feel like if we could give that message to people, we'd be doing a tremendous value in our communities. Okay, so when I wanted to talk about mental health, I wanted to say one of the issues with mental health is mental health in general. When we talk about mental health in general, is a continuum. Okay? Nobody feels happy all the time every day. We don't feel the same every day. We're not always in the same, it's not just mood, we're not always in the same place in life. We're not always, okay? And there are differences in our own internal mental health that are normal. So when I think of mental health, I like to think of it as a continuum. Okay? So I'm going to talk about just a minute about like normal range mental health, and then when mental health starts to what I call crossing the middle. You know, this is the side that's in the normal range, and then when is it that we cross over? Okay, so first of all, I just want to say, in case anyone hasn't figured this one out, but I'm sure you have by now, normal life has lots of stress and challenges. Okay? Everybody's life has some sort of stress. Nobody has, you know, I remember like when I first got married, there was somebody I knew, like she seemed to have like just such a perfect life. You know, like, you know, some people just, and then I discovered that her husband actually was suffers from a terrible, like, it's not an illness that would be, but just he has these terrible like back pains and different things that come up. So nobody has, you know, or she has family issues. Nobody has a perfect life. Everybody has some sort of stress or challenge that's a normal part of life. Daily life has its stresses, and then everybody has like their nisayon in life. So what we do in order to handle that is we all have coping skills. Okay, that's one of the things that I do a lot. I spend a lot of years teaching people coping, what I call normal life coping skills, all the hospital organization, time management, relaxation skills, all the normal kinds of things that we have that are like coping skills. There's also creating a supportive home environment. There's also the fact that we have outside support of friends, extended family sometimes. We have Rebbeim, we have communities, we have, in other words, there are support systems that we create. We have our own coping skills, we create our home environment, and we create, and we have like environmental structures. For most people, we have those kind of environmental structures. Then there are more stressful periods of life that are part of what I would call the life cycle. Pregnancy, birth, a simcha, like a bar mitzvah, a wedding, you know, even if it's your sister's wedding. Did you ever notice people get very stressed? I always joke, sometimes you have to remember that it's a simcha, you know, that's why they have to call it a simcha, so you would remember to be happy about it. Pre-Pesach, pre-Yom Tov, those are normal life cycles. Again, they become more stressful, and we need more coping skills. Sometimes we can become overwhelmed. Sometimes at those periods, we'll show stress signs. Stress signs are things like inability to sleep, overeating or not wanting to eat, wanting to run away. Sometimes it can get as much as like small anxiety attacks. Okay, you know what a small anxiety attack is? Like when you feel like really tense, you feel like you can't breathe. Because sometimes people will call you up and say, "Yeah, I was so stressed, I felt like I can't breathe." Okay, that's not a full-blown anxiety disorder. That's like she had a little anxiety attack, right? Okay, now, sometimes we have situations that are, I would call them challenging, like temporary. So what do I mean by a challenging temporary situation? You're in a job somewhere and it's not working out. That could be very, and you know you have to relocate. That could be very stressful. But again, it's temporary. It's not a long term. It's a short term. You're going to work it out. You're going to deal with it and it's going to be over. Or you have, you know, a child who's in the hospital with a broken leg. Okay, that sets off the whole house because, you know, he needs therapy, he's in there. Let's say it's a complicated broken leg. I don't mean just, you know, like I had a son who broke his, he was two and he broke his knee at the growth plate. Of course, it was Erev Pesach. I was in my eighth month. I was not sure I wasn't supposed to be able to get out of bed. And it was the days before the cell phone, so of course I couldn't even reach my husband or anybody else and tell them that I was in the hospital with my son to like, you know. Anyway, so, right? So that kind of situation where you're going to need more help, more money, more like possibly therapies, possibly those kinds of situations that come up. A friend who, I don't know, something happened to her, so now her kids, this happens a lot in Israel, you know, like somebody who does something, like she has her kids, her there was a terrorist attack, so her kids, her friends in the hospital, they have her kids, so you're having somebody else's kids in your house for an extended period of time. But again, it's going to be a month, it's going to be, it's not, it may be 2 months, it may be 6 months. You may have a kid who's, you know, a teenager. Teenager, could you imagine, who's out of sorts and it's going to be a difficult period or whatever it is. No, it depends on who, right? It starts at age 2 and finishes after they get married. I'm not sure when after they get married. Okay, but I'm just giving examples of things that could be short-term, something that would come up in a school situation with your child, you know, and you're going to have to wait out the end of the school year, but you know, at the end of the school year, they'll get a new teacher, whatever it is. I'm giving a type of example. Okay. But then it starts to get a little more intense. So say, I'm going to give the first example of something that I would start, say, people are going to start to see. And again, this is the kind of thing you can recognize it. One of the reasons to give this is we want to be able to recognize it in ourselves, in our spouses, in our children, in close people around us, in close community members. Burnout. Okay? So I would say the first starting to go over the line thing that happens a lot in Kiruv is burnout. You're working really hard, you're putting in, you don't get paid as much as we all should. I wish everybody here was getting, you know, the top dollar salaries. We all should, we will be in Shemayim, but in this world that's not how it works, right? And you feel really unappreciated, and you're going over the line, and that's normal because you're working hard. When does it go over the line? It goes over the line, and this is important to recognize, especially with your husband, especially with yourself. It goes over the line when you stop. You know, in all our work, we work hard, but there's a certain satisfaction we feel in the Kiruv, right? But then there's a point where it goes over the line. We stop feeling that satisfaction, and we only feel frustration, exhaustion, a sense of failure, hopeless, unappreciated, loss of motivation. I just want to tell you, Last week I got a call from one of the most successful Kiruv couples out, but they work very hard in a very hard situation. They're a young couple doing something that, you know, like a 50-year-old couple would be having a hard time doing. They're in a very hard situation. I go there a lot. I give them a lot of chizuk, and she called me up and she said, "This is it. I think my husband's, you know, really not doing well." She had spoken to me before Yantif. Because of it, they decided not to stay in their community for Pesach, which was a big thing, and they went to their family instead to get refilled. They came back and she said, "My husband really crashed." So, well, tell me what he really crashed. He really crashed. He doesn't want to work. He doesn't feel good. He says, "This is it." He feels like he has done nothing. It's like this is somebody who has built an entire community up, and the whole thing is going to fall if they leave. And if he feels, okay, that he is doing nothing, that's, you know, burnout. That's one of the signs. Big time, this person has hit burnout. Now, I just want to take this example one step further. Now, what if this isn't happening in this situation? He flew in to speak to Rabbi. We got him to fly out of where he is to speak to people, and they're working it out. By the way, there, and again, for all of these things, there are things to help. If you are seeing first steps of burnout, okay, I brought this, and I didn't know how many people would want it, whatever. But you can also look it up under the computer. You know, they have, if you type in, because I'm really not computer savvy. You know, if you type in burnout, you know, Google search, they will give you, you know, an intensive list of the symptoms of burnout and what you can do, first step, second step. But what? Yeah, what I'm going to do is, I brought a copy. I'll just tell you what I did, because I debated whether I want to go through explaining every single, you know, thing I'm going to talk about in depth. But instead, what I did is I did make copies. I did bring a copy of the ones that I thought were just simple and easy, and whoever wants one can get a copy. So I do have the one on burnout here, and I'll go into it when I go into the mental disorders. I have a copy on every one of them for people, and whoever wants, I'll just ask Chaya Shandel to make copies and we'll give them out. Okay? Okay, so I just want to point this out, that not in this case, but I was dealing with the case, this was about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, I was dealing with somebody where the couple went someplace, it wasn't working out, and he had a lot of job dissatisfaction, and I went to visit them, and he wasn't getting out of bed. Now, she didn't realize that that's already a sign of depression. That went over the line. And she wasn't getting it. She just thought, like, you know, he started with just going late for Minyan, not feeling well, not wanting to go to work. And then by the time I got there, he didn't get out of bed. Okay, he didn't get out of bed to go to shul in the morning. There were guests in the house. He did not get out of bed. Okay, and I mean, I know this couple because I know the Ne'er Lalev couples. And I said to her, straight out, I said, "You know, I'm really concerned that your husband has gone over the line." Because she kept saying, "No, it's just burnout and job dissatisfaction." And I said,
"She didn't want to imagine that
it's denied." Right, we're going to talk about it. Right, what happens is, and this is what happens, and that's why it's so important for us to recognize it, know that we can deal with it, because, you know, the minute we say, I said to her, "You know, this is really depression, and this is what you need to do, and this is what we're going to do to help him," she was like, oh, and then we did it, and then he got a new job, and there's someplace else, and I just got a report about how well they're doing, okay? But if you stay in that place of denial, and you don't deal with it, or you don't recognize it, that's why this is so important, okay? So I want to talk a little bit more about, so when do you know that somebody's crossed over the line? So the first is that the symptoms become persistent. It's not like if he had just gone to bed for a day, okay, and then the next day gotten out of bed and said, "Okay, you know, I needed a day, okay, I couldn't deal with it, life was too tough," you know, but when he's not getting out of bed day after day. So persistent, extreme, okay? Mental illness signs tend to be more extreme. Like, they're all regular signs, but they, like, that's also part of it. Like, it's regular behavior. So, like, I'll give you an example. On Friday, I sat in on a session where both the mother and the school therapist had asked me to sit in on it. And what happened was, basically, this person turned to the woman there, and she was saying, you know, your daughter's behavior is really a little bit over the top. And the woman, you know, who had asked me to come, was basically saying to her, well, you know, I'm seeing a psychologist, and the psychologist is working with her with behavior control, and she thinks that's what it needs. And basically, I mean, this was like, and I think the person was appropriate, even though I felt like it was a little strong. She said to her, no, you're not getting it. I'm really concerned that this, you know, the person's working with your daughter has not really seen how out of control she really gets when she gets angry. And I'm concerned that she's crossing the line into mental illness and insanity. When the woman heard that, she was like, she hadn't even thought of that, which was surprising because her daughter's behavior is extreme, okay? But she's used to it. You see, and I want to point this out. So, and lots of people talk about their kids having temper tantrums and getting angry, right? We all joke, you know, I have 6 boys, so I'll, you know, talk about how I have the wild Indians and, you know, but there's that regular, like, the boys fight and they throw things, and then there's that, like, and even, right, and even, you know, and I'll just say this because everybody knows anyone who's been in my house knows my boys, I have these big front glass windows and the zagag, the glazer, you know, has our measurements because they'll throw the ball, you know, one will throw a shoe at somebody and he'll dodge and it goes through the window, okay? So, you know, so I could say that, okay, but again, it's different than if he's saying, I hate you, I'm going to kill you, and he does that every day, okay? So if they get, you know, so if my 7-year-old, you know, if my 9-year-old comes in and breaks my 7-year-old's Lego and he gets angry and says, you know, I want to kill him and da-da-da, and then 20 minutes later he's calm and everything's fine, okay? And it's hard because, you know, people, if you're used to it, you don't realize that, no, an hour later she's still sitting there saying, I want to kill him, I want to kill him, and she's like, you know, raged, and she can't get out of that rage herself, and she's out of control. So that's already crossing a line. We don't, it's hard for us, and I just want to say this, it's hard for us, and it's part of the reason that it's hard to diagnose, okay, is because, again, a lot of times these are, okay, I want to give another example that's common, a woman after birth, okay, so again, a woman after birth is tired, okay, she is hormonal. Okay, she is, you know, it's, we're happy, but we're also a little cuckoo, you know, 6 weeks for 6 weeks afterwards, we're tired, we're cuckoo. You know, so when you're the neighbor or you're the husband, how do you know when she's gone over the line? When she doesn't want to take care of the baby anymore, when she really isn't getting out of bed. But you want to try and find it before it's that extreme. I want to say something else, and it's also a little tricky because, you know, a lot of these illnesses, they look alike. Somebody just called me. Somebody who works in, you know, has a thing, called me up, and she said, you know, I'm dealing with a woman who I'm sure has postpartum depression, and she's not admitting it. So I said, okay, what are the symptoms? She tells me, it sounds just like postpartum depression. Okay, and then I say, well, you know, so if she's not functioning, what are they telling everybody? She's not getting out of bed, she's not functioning, all these chesed girls, you're sending all these chesed girls in. So she says, well, she claims she has this, like, illness, but I've never heard of it. Now, I don't know the name. I know what it is, but
fibromyalgia.
Okay, so apparently she has fibromyalgia. She has a very bad case. She had mono before, and she's really... So I said, oh, that makes sense. She probably doesn't have postpartum depression. Okay, right. But, no, but right. She might, but she might not. She might really have this illness. So again, okay, but my point is, you know, that's one of the reasons that I just want to say this, and that's why people, it's not so easy to discern, and that's why I always tell people, I'm going to go back to the names of illnesses and different illnesses, but I just want to say this, it is difficult to diagnose, it is difficult to know, so if you suspect that you or your spouse or somebody in your family or one of your children or your mother-in-law, okay, because that comes up a lot, okay, I want to just mention this. You know, elderly people, their illnesses like dementia and schizophrenia, somebody was calling me up, and I'm sure that her mother-in-law has gone over the line into the schizophrenic line because she is so paranoid that her kids are trying to take her money and, like...
Probably a diary to diagnose.
probably more with dementia also, because schizophrenia is at an old age.
I'm aware.
It's probably a form of like dementia with.
But I'm not a doctor, you know. Yeah, but I'm just saying, whatever it is, whatever the point is, it's over the line. Now, they didn't even think of that. She's calling me to complain about her mother-in-law, you know, and this is somebody I'm good friends with, and she's telling me, and it's really, you know, and then she tells me what happened. I said, you know, I have to tell you, this crosses the line. So I'm not a doctor, I don't diagnose, and that's my next thing, okay? So my first thing is, if you notice symptoms, start to chart the frequency and intensity. Don't just brush them off. Because then you'll notice how many times are you, how hard is it really for you to get out of bed? You know, I get women who call me who are in these isolated places. I had a woman, she had gone into full-blown depression. And she just didn't even realize it. And I said, she said, you know, I just lost cheshek and da-da-da, and, you know, and blah, blah, blah. I said, I'm really concerned. And I had her go to a psychiatrist. And sure enough, she was, like, really suffering full-blown depression. And when we talk about treatment, I'm going to mention this again, but I just want to say, because I think sometimes people are afraid to go because they're afraid, well, if I'm depressed and I have to start medication, I'll never get off medication. No! You can take medication for a short, she took medication for a short period of time, got over it, was able to deal with what she had to deal with, and Baruch Hashem today is functioning, they're working on relocating. Okay? Very important. So the first thing, again, is notice the symptoms. Start to chart them if you notice them. Okay? Don't brush them off. The second thing is, go to a professional. And when I say a professional, the best professional you can. So that means if somebody calls me and I think they went over the top, I will say to them, and that's why I said to her, I'm not a doctor. You must go to the best professional you can. And it's a big chesed if you have a list of good professionals that you've had or that are in your community. It's very important. And also even if you know people not to go to. So like, for instance, in Israel, there are a lot of rabbits, not quacks, you know what happens a lot? And I'm going to say this, and this is, you know, I always tell people, you go to a rabbitson or a friend for chizuk, not for medical diagnosis. You can go to a rebbe and any rav for an eitzah, a bracha, a referral, but they're not psychiatrists, they're not doctors, and any qualified rav that I've ever worked with will say that, and they'll tell people, but you have a lot of people who, like, think that they, and will give people eitzah that, you know, even I, you know, and that was always my, even as a college teacher, when people would say, like, people had trouble with bedikas, all these things, I would never help a person with the quote-unquote, even if somebody said, oh, it's just because she's shy, and it's just because this, until she sees a doctor, and I know there's not a medical reason she can't do a bedika, I will not, same thing, anyone comes to me with a mental health issue as a counselor, that I think is, I will not see them as if for a therapeutic intervention, if I think they need medication until they've had an evaluation, and I've.
I think also, like, just from the perspective of, like, a representative in the community, like, I find people come to me for advice about their family members. So they're not even coming to me and saying.
Correct.
I think I have a problem. It's already one step removed, and they're like, I think my mother-in-law has borderline personality disorder.
Right.
Already you're getting a skewed perspective.
Exactly. So exactly. Exactly. So can you bring that up again? Because I want to talk about how to deal with a situation when somebody comes and says, like, my mother-in-law, my.
Yeah, I don't have anyone coming to me and saying they think they're mentally ill.
Yeah, of course. No. Correct. No, correct. Well, I have both. So I do have, and I have situations where I see the situation happening, meaning, like, what will happen is a woman will call me in a place and she'll tell me I feel upset or I feel this or I feel down. Very often when a person's in it, they don't see it, and that's why it's a very big chesed if you, as another person, see it and you're working with somebody who's like one of your co-kirub workers.
Well, what is the responsibility that you think you have or any representative will have in having a list of qualified professionals to give a
okay, so I want to say, wait, so I want to say this. I want to say this because I always tell people, I'm giving you some names, please get your own. Okay, and I tell people, and this is also important, even if you go to one professional, I want, if you have something to add, I love it. So if you, if you have, especially being that you're a doctor here, when you said you were coming to the session, I was thinking, oh no.
I was saying that it's such a great idea to have a professional in the area. She said the books also.
It's really, I happen to think it's really good. I just want to say, I'm going to ask to hold questions unless it's about the thing, and I'll give.
Apologies.
Okay, no, I just think it's really important for when you refer a professional, also to tell somebody, if this person doesn't work for you, tell me and I'll give you another name. Or if you see, because sometimes somebody just misses somebody, something, even like this woman that I gave you the example, that's a perfect example. She was seeing a competent child psychologist for her, but that she hadn't seen what the school therapist had seen. You know, so what we had come up at the end of that was that the school therapist, not the mother, should call the psychologist and tell her what she had seen, and that they should come up with an idea. Okay? I'm sure by then the psychologist would have agreed, if she heard the description that this woman gave, that this should definitely be tested. We don't know, well, fine. It doesn't always mean that it's, you know what I'm saying? But if you see the symptoms, it needs to be typed, and you need to find a professional that is professional, qualified, that you feel comfortable with, you know, competent, okay, but it's important, again, that you feel that they're getting your kid and your situation, or your husband, or you, or whoever it is, and if you feel like they're not, there are always more doctors and therapists, and sometimes people have specialties. An ADHD specialist is going to see ADHD in your child and might not pick up that your child is suffering from bipolar disorder, which happens a lot. Not a lot, but in other words, that's the kind of mistake that could easily be made. Or if he has an anxiety disorder that's coming with aggression, again, an ADHD specialist is most likely going to see it as ADHD because his questionnaires are geared towards ADHD, and since it's similar, so if you feel like they're not getting it, like somebody was telling me, she had a child when they had bipolar, not ADHD, and she went to two different people, but there was one symptom he had that just neither of them had on their list, and nobody ever addressed, and it kept coming up, okay, which was that he kept saying, I want to die. Okay. Thank you. Okay. So she said, well, and neither of the doctors like took that. And she said he used to say it every night. So they used to say, oh, it's probably when he goes off the Ritalin. He just has a little down. He has that down. One of them said, don't do anything. One of them said, you know, give sugar a little bit before they go down, right? And here's this kid who every night would start to say, I want to die. Okay, and whatever. Okay,
what did he have?
Bipolar disorder.
Bipolar disorder.
It became much worse before they realized. It went from I want to die to he started to have very violent outbursts. A lot of people. So again, a manic phase. A lot of people think of a manic phase as this happy. They run around doing happy things. A lot of the manic phase is an angry outburst kind of phase. And again, a bipolar disorder. I had a woman who called me up, and she's very frustrated. Her husband, you know, I do the time management, you know. So people call me up, you know, my husband just can't keep to the budget. Okay, and we sit down, we do a budget, and he only seems happy when he's shopping and spending money. Okay, that to me is first you try, and then I say, what?
Especially in a man.
Right. So I say, right. Okay, so I say, wow, you know, that's an unusual symptom. You know, let's try this. Let's try having the meeting for budget. And then, you know, if it doesn't work, I suggest you go and have somebody, you know, just check it out. Because, you know, it could be a symptom of something more. Okay.
Can I just add one thing? I mean, just in my experience, I found, for whatever reason, I don't find this with psychiatrists as much as with therapists, social worker, psychologists. Very often, some people are very good and sometimes not. So when I hear from someone that I see that a therapist has really made a difference, I keep a list of those therapists that I've really seen have had success. And I don't try to refer to anybody but those therapists
correct.
I know.
Correct.
Because I've seen marriage counselors
right.
that
so
work with
right.
couples for a long time. And I hear
right.
what they're telling them. And
I'm even going to share something that happened to you that if it hadn't happened to me, I would never have believed it. Okay? So we had a kid that we could get, needed speech therapy and some other things, and we could get it on the medical health insurance that we had. But in order to do it, we had to see all these, different professionals. Okay, so it just so happened that one of the professionals we could see was somebody I had always wanted to meet. I'd heard about this person. They had, you know, come to Israel recently. He had a specialty I was interested in. So I actually tried to make sure that that was the person we'd be referred to for this thing. So, okay, now I have to tell you, it was one of the most It was actually traumatic. I have to say, it was almost traumatic. If there was, like, it was funny, but it was like very traumatic to me to see that a supposedly known, supposedly competent health professional, that this is what happened, and this really happened, okay, and it happened to me, that my husband and I went in, and the person sat down and said, okay, you know, I understand that you're having your son evaluated, da-da-da, and you know, I just want to tell you that, you know, whenever there are difficulties in the family, so the first thing he says is, you know, one of the important things is going to be time management techniques. So my husband says, oh, time management, my wife wrote a book. Okay, I don't know how, but I was sitting in a position that I could see his pad and what he was writing. So my husband says, you know, oh, my wife, she wrote, now what would be the normal next thing that a normal, that I would have thought would have been the normal response would have been to say, how nice, oh, what book did you write? Oh, you're a time man, some acknowledgement. Oh, so like then you probably know about this and we don't have to spend a lot of time at something, right? Okay. He went, oh, and he continued talking about the time, and he writes, I check if the husband is delusional, thinks wife wrote book. Wait, gets better. So then he says, you know, and the other thing that happens when people have a hard time is, you know, that it stresses their marriages. So we're also going to talk about you know, improving your marriages and your skills and making sure you spend time together. So again, my husband's like a very sharp, very tummy guy, and he hasn't seen what I've seen on the thing, right? So he says, you know, because it's really important, because, you know, when you have, you know, a hard situation in the house, you tend to not be supportive and not give each other time, so you might not. So my husband, you know, again, between moves, says, oh, every Matzah Shabbos, my wife and I, we have, like, our time together. So I right. I think he's in denial. Okay, so we have this session. I was just floored. I didn't even know what to say. I didn't answer any of the questions. I just was so blown away because this was somebody who was like, you know, the only Dhammakasalus I can have is he must usually get very extreme cases, and maybe because I'd asked to, like, specifically for him, and we were not the typical, that was the only thing I could think of to be Dhammakasalus. But I have to say that afterwards, because it used to be when people would tell me, oh, I went to this person and it was terrible and I had such a bad experience, I would always think they were really exaggerating. But now, after that experience, I said, wow, even somebody who's known to be good could really miss the boat. So,
you know, I tell people a lot that it's like Shadoma, but to find a doctor to take a counsel about, whatever, you don't have to like them, you don't have to connect to them, they just have to do the job well and be good at their skill. But to have a relationship, to have a good outcome from a therapist, you have to have a relationship
right.
with a therapist.
Right.
So that can sometimes take, you know, you don't always get it on the first try. It doesn't mean you don't need therapy, it just means you didn't hit the right person.
Right.
So like you said, you know what I mean? And what a
right.
person might work for someone else.
Right, exactly. That's, you know, I realize, like I just want to say, my Dhammakasalus for this person, I really believe that that's usually what happens. I really believe that in this, that what happens, that was the only, because I thought this is just so wild and outrageous. Like, I walked out of there, my husband goes, yeah, it was really funny because my husband walked out and he goes, that was, like, very interesting. I didn't really feel like he got us. I was like, yeah, he really did not get us at all. We're not going back to this person. This is it. And it wasn't even like I could go back to him because I really wanted to, like, meet him professionally, but it was like that was just not going to happen. Okay. Okay. Treatment. I just want to say this. Treatment. There is medication, and I find that very often people are, for some reason, very afraid of medication. And I was thinking, you know, there are people who won't take antibiotics either. But, so I'm not talking about people who never use medication, but in general, I just want to say this again. Medication is touch and go, like in a lot of these situations, till they get the right medication, till they get the right mix. Like sometimes people call me, I have depression, they gave me medication, and I'm anxious from it. So sometimes it takes time, sometimes it's not the right medication, sometimes they have to work on the mix, and that's why it's so important to have a good professional, and a professional you work well with, because you have to be able to report back and work at adjusting the medication. And very often medication can be temporary. I remember like once speaking to a neurologist about somebody's situation. She said, most of medication is because, like, if you have a chemical imbalance or you have a neurological imbalance, like in a she was explaining to me, like in a neurological imbalance, what they're trying to do is just, they want to get the brain back on track, because the minute they can get the brain back on track, then the brain remembers, you know, what it can do, then you can start to think about lowering medication or taking the person off of medication. Like if, you know, like if people are having like epileptic, this is usually more in like the epileptic type things, or things where the brain, you know, is causing disturbances. Okay. In the chemical imbalances, again, when you get the balance right, very often the medication could be, you know, cut down, sometimes taken off. So people, I think sometimes when people think of mental illness, their vision is like institution, their vision is just so extreme that they're afraid of getting the medication, of starting the process.
Just out of curiosity, do you know, like, what are the percentages like of, like, people that end up needing it to be stable for life, and people that, like, end up just, like, it's a temporary thing?
I'm not a doctor to know that kind of information. All I'm going to tell you is what I think is really important.
Either way, it doesn't matter. But
is, right. You know, I want to just say something. You know, I do the interviewing for Narelle Olive. If I found out that somebody had a mental illness but was, you know, on the scale and was, you know, and treating it, I'm fine with it. If I suspect mental illness and this happens, and I say, you know, and there's on that form, it says, do you have any illnesses? Do you take any medication? And they don't put it on, I will not consider them. And I'll check a reference, and I always find out. I always know. So, you know what I'm saying? Like, it's... And I just want to tell you, if they're not treating it, I won't, you know, I won't, especially because a lot of times people who have these kinds of illnesses, they're told, you know, if you just go to Yehupitzville, it'll be great, and you're doing something, whatever, and they don't realize, no, it's not going to be great for them, especially if they're not treating it, especially if they're, you know, this happens a lot where people want to go to places like Russia where there's no medical treatment. There's no way I'm going to let somebody go and do that. It's not what do you call it? Responsible. I have that responsibility. Okay. I want to go through a list, and then the last thing I want to talk about is getting extra support and getting support and why that's hard. And I want to spend, you know, more time on that, but I just want to go through some of the most common illnesses that you're going to come through. I'm going to give a very simplistic explanation. I brought for a copy of those, and again, any of these illnesses, if you ever think somebody has them, and you put it into the computer, you can get a list of the symptoms, a list of the treatments, and you can check it over and look it over and see if this is what you think you're dealing with. Okay? So the most common illnesses that we deal with are anxiety disorders like OCD. Okay, OCD is most commonly... Okay, yes, most commonly expressed in suddenly doing, I mean, the typical example they'll give is the hand washing, but it could be, you know, sudden extreme chumras. We had a boy that came to us, was very attracted to my husband. My husband is, you know, very machmir by his nature. Very kind, not that like stern type of machmir, but like in halach, my husband's very machmir. This boy was just too attracted to that of my husband. It made me very nervous, you know, and I told the yeshiva he was in, I said, I'm very nervous, he's moving too fast, and he's too attracted to that side of my husband, which is not normal for like a Baal Tshuva type of person. I said, that makes me very nervous, have this guy checked out. And they came back and they said, yeah, this guy has like extreme OCD actually. Okay, so OCD is also anxiety, worry. Sometimes somebody gets obsessed with the thought about their husband. My husband, I dealt with somebody. She was always worried if her husband was a little bit late from work, that he was in a car accident, that he died, that he had a heart, you know, but extreme. Every day, all the time, she used to worry about it. She'd wake up at night and check that he was there and that he was breathing and that, you know, he didn't have a heart attack in his sleep. Okay, that would be like the OCD type anxiety. Anxiety disorders, by the way, I don't know a lot about how they manifest in children. But I do know, and I have had this experience with people, that you sometimes will find a child who goes over the border just like that shy, but is like actually anxious about school, anxious, you know, stays up at night worrying about, you know, like somebody was telling me she had a son who was like, like young, like in third grade, was like very anxious about school, very anxious about tests, so again, I always tell people, go and see somebody, have them evaluated. Okay, this could be an anxiety disorder expressing itself in a child. And again, I don't know the exact ages, and I'm not, but I'm just saying, when you see those kinds of symptoms, don't ignore them. Don't just say, oh, you know, he has a tough Rebbe this year, maybe it's hard, maybe it's stress, maybe, and maybe not. Okay? Mood disorders. The two main mood disorders are depression and bipolar depression. I think most people by now today in our society know that depression is one where the system basically shuts down and the person really doesn't want to do anything. They don't want to care for themselves. They don't want to get out of bed. They don't want to do anything. Beginning symptoms are obviously less extreme. Okay? Bipolar is depression with the manic phase. And we said the manic phase could be shown in things like, you know, spending a lot of money, wanting to go out and spend a lot of money, wanting to always be out, not being able to sleep, anger, aggression.
Learning to sleep
and
the night.
What?
Learning for like a week straight and not sleeping.
Right, but that's already pretty, that's already, you know.
Right.
And it shifts, and there are different types of bipolar. I have this written down, so you can know. Just for some people, they'll have like a month like this and a month like that. For some people, you'll see they switch like this, the cyclic, you know. So there's a lot of these different kinds of. I want to say something about postpartum depression. I think some people don't know that besides postpartum depression, there's something called postpartum psychosis. And in postpartum psychosis, the person can also be depressed, but usually what happens is then they start hallucinating. Okay? So there's something, and I just want to say this, because sometimes a lot of people are not aware about, like, postpartum psychosis. We had a woman in Neral Aleph who actually developed it, and it was very, like, she thought her son was Mashiach, and is very...
And it can be actually a danger to their babies if they get into the postpartum psychosis.
Yeah, it's mamash.
You can't ignore it. So. But even like normal people that never had a problem,
right?
And just the hormones.
That's
so,
right.
So,
that's right.
So you're thinking, oh, but I know this person for years. She
right.
Can't ignore it.
Right. Okay, in schizophrenia, and I just want to say this, the main symptom of the schizophrenia is hallucinations, even though people talk about like the schizophrenia is like the split personality. What?
I know that there's not split personality. Right, you said people think
of it as split personalities, but it's not. It's the hallucination. I just want to tell you something. I was dealing with somebody. I do date coaching. It was one of my big things. So somebody called me up that she... Date coaching. And one of the older singles was dating somebody who she was told was a little bit unusual. And then she told me that in the middle of the date, she thinks he was talking to his mother, like he suddenly seemed to be talking to himself. And she said, who are you talking to? She said, excuse me? And he said, oh, I'm just talking to my mother. And then he like said, you know, went back to whatever the date was. Okay? So I sent her, what?
It wasn't a Bluetooth.
I sent her, no, I said no. I sent her, but I did tell her not to see him again until she went to see, I have a brother who does evaluations. I said, you go right to my brother, I'm going to get you. Because I just knew I could get my brother to like see her that night. So I was like, you're going to my brother, you're sending him to my brother, you tell him you're not going to think until, and my brother's like a rabbi, like, so people, it's a good cover in the Frum community. So people don't have to tell people that he's really a psychologist. So she said, I want you to go see my rabbi, and my brother called and said, the guy is in La La Land, okay? And I want to tell you something, when I called the Shadchanit who set him up, she didn't even know, clueless. She said, yeah, you know, he's a little bit unusual, but he seems like a very put-together older guy. He's been to my house lots of times, okay? Obviously, he didn't talk to his mother at her table. It was, I guess, only when he went out on dates that they reminded him of his mother. Okay, borderline personality, you know, where all of a sudden they love you, they hate you. Also, extreme, like, aggressive expression of their feelings and anger often at you. That change, you don't know suddenly why they change. Borderline is very complex. I'm not going into all of the, okay, but I just want, what I'm really giving you is some of the, like, things that should be, like, red flags for you? Like when somebody tells you, you know, when you're dealing with somebody, and this can happen also in the Kiruv, and it could be somebody who, like a mother-in-law, or okay, and one minute she's hot, and one minute she's cold, and one minute she's like really loving, and the next minute she has tinnitus from here to tomorrow, and she's like, okay. So again, I just want to just mention a few of them that people don't always think of it, and you had mentioned this one, and I thought of it in the elderly, dementia, delirium. Okay, which can also sometimes, again, in some of these it's hard. You know, somebody I know is dealing with her mother, and her mother became mamash, like, really lost it. She would just get, she would get very confused. She could remember where she was. She could remember, anyway, it turned out she had a very extreme vitamin deficiency. Okay, but till they, you know, she actually had put her into a hospital. And she wasn't responding to the medication, and they couldn't figure out why, and she was getting worse. Okay, so that's why I say sometimes it's so hard because these things are not so pashut, but it's just recognizing, okay, in the elderly, in childhood, recognizing the differences between ADHD and regular mental illnesses. I just want to say somebody asked me to bring up the like an abusive marriage. And, you know, what do you do when you see people in an abusive marriage? And I just want to say, very often when you're dealing with somebody who's an abuser, you are dealing with somebody who has bipolar or one of these kinds of paranoid kind of things or personality disorders, which is why it's so complex. Okay, what I'd like to do is talk about, do you know how long this session is supposed to?
Yes, 11:15.
Okay, perfect. I want to talk about getting support, and then I want to open it up for questions, etc. So I just mentioned some of the different disorders. I have a list here. Again, because I was doing this, I wanted to see how easy it is for people, like if you think you're in this situation, how easy it is to just look it up and get, you know, and you can get like real like lists. Again, you won't get a therapist, and you won't get and talk about. By the way, borderline. This was very interesting because it used to be there isn't. They always said there was no therapy and nothing that worked for borderline. Today, there are actually facilities that do borderline treatment. So that's also important to know. I can't remember. I had it written down what that was, but now I just have like the pages. Successful. Yeah, it's actually interesting because Sue is the person who told me about that they just referred. You might know about this case. That's what I was. Somebody that had come to this. Somebody we know does a, you know, like a self-improvement, I'll just for lack of a better thing, type of thing. And they had somebody who it turned out was borderline. And here they'd been working with this person and nothing was working for this person. And then finally, somebody said she went to, like, you know, get it, you know, help. You would say, you know, you live in Israel, your Hebrew doesn't get better, but you forget your English, you know? So I used to actually have like a very high level, you know, English type, but now I just forget certain words. She went to get, you know, help with somebody about how to deal with this, and the person said, yeah, this sounds really unusual. Maybe you should send her for an evaluation. They actually discovered she had borderline. So she's actually in a borderline therapy, and it was actually helping her. And I understand, I mean, these haven't been around long enough, but from what they can tell, these, you know, even if they help short-term and the person has to go back, that's also helpful for borderline, because until now, there was nothing that really worked for borderline, which is one of the reasons that any time a therapist ever got a borderline, they were like, okay.
Borderline
personality disorder. I mean, in depth, it's, you know, there's something very disturbed inside the person. I'm not going to, you know, it's a whole complex diagnosis for borderline. But the main thing is, like, the person will seem like your friend, seem happy, seem whatever, and then they'll suddenly, like, turn on you. They'll have a ton of complaints, and that's usually the symptom that you'll be seeing. The internal is that just internally, they feel very empty all the time. They feel not successful. It's, you know, they're missing an inner core. No. It leads to borderline, not
it's
depression. It's a diagnosis itself.
But
borderline personality disorder.
Uh-huh. And that's different from bipolar.
Yes, I have, you know what, I have it here and I'll give it to you afterwards to read. And you can see, and that's also why it's important, you know.
Dissociation.
To be a psychologist in order to be a
person.
But that's why I say, no, but that's why I say, that's why I didn't, that's why I was thinking about it. Should I go into this in depth? No. I want you to know the red flags. The red flags is you have a relationship with this person. They sometimes are nice, and sometimes they're just like
lashing
out at you. Those are the, you know, in other words, I'm giving you the red flags. And those red flags aren't going to tell you what the diagnosis are, but they are a sign that this person needs help. And if you start to chart their symptoms and their behavior, you will be able to go to a competent professional and get help. Mm-hmm. That's the point of this.
Will they lash out at a Revitin like that?
Oh, anybody.
Yeah, for sure.
Anybody, yeah.
Can I add something?
Sure.
So, I mean, what I found that sometimes is difficult is that, like, a lot of people that we work with, you know, in Kiru, so when life gets a little bit difficult, like, in our medical system, very often, regular internists are prescribing Prozac and other medications. Now, we're not qualified to decide whether that person should be on Prozac or not. But whatever. When that happens, I really push for that person who is coming to me advice to actually see a psychiatrist,
right?
Rather than
right. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's why I say the best professional.
A tremendous number of people I know that are normal leading normal lives and that are having certain stresses in their life, they tell their general doctor about it and
general doctor should be referring them.
Right. No, but it's right. Not the way our medical system is working right now. And it's not, and I know that right. A lot of these people, some of them need to be on it, but I know that a lot of them
right.
Don't.
Absolutely.
And I can't make that decision which ones right. Do and they don't. So just to recognize, we think it's all great if we refer them. It's not always all great if we refer
right.
Them. Because very often because they're being put on that medication, they're not really dealing with the fact that right. They don't have good communication skills in their marriage, and that's why they're unhappy, and they really need to work
right.
On those skills.
Right.
But now they feel great, you know, so they don't feel like they need to work on it.
Okay.
So you have
so
to
can
kind of
I, the
you have to help people find the right person for their situation.
Right.
You can't just say, okay, they're seeing somebody,
right.
It's okay.
Okay. I want to go on and talk about getting support and why it's so hard to work with mental illness, because I think this is really the part that I think is more helpful than everything else I just gave. And I want to, I'm going to keep it on still, but then we can converse about it. I'm going to have the tape turned off, okay? Whether we want to admit it or not, mental illness has... When you're dealing with somebody who has mental illness, or you yourself have mental illness, one of the things you really need is a lot of support and a lot of extra help. And what happens is usually just the opposite. And part of that is because of the stigma of mental illness. And that's really why a lot of people won't deal with it, go into denial, is because mental illness has a stigma. Nobody would say, I don't want to tell anybody I have a strep throat. Okay? In the front community, because of shidduchim, people might not want to tell people if they're having kidney dysfunction. Okay? But mental illness is even worse. Okay? And because of that, people become very isolated. Okay? And it's also one of the reasons that people don't want to go to doctors, don't want to get referrals, go into denial, okay, is because of this. Because there is this stigma. I just want to mention that somebody told me this, that there's somebody, and his name is Nathaniel Helfgott. Now, I didn't have a chance to look this up, but he's a Frum rabbi who actually came out publicly and speaks about his own battle with, I think it was depression. I don't remember if she told me it was depression or mental illness, and is working very hard on this. And I feel like I wouldn't tell people, you know, go public with this, because there is discrimination in getting jobs. There's a lot of discrimination against, and again, part of it is because we have a vision of mental illness as like everybody who's in a mental hospital. Mm-hmm. We don't have the vision of like the people who, you know, somebody at the beginning of, you know, postpartum depression who gets it, you know, and gets medication right away is going to be on her feet again. And she might not suffer depression afterwards again. It was a hormonal imbalance. She went off, and now she's fine. Okay? People who have mental illness, okay, and this is one of the hard things, it doesn't mean that it's forever. It doesn't mean, okay, and even if it is long term, like say bipolar, it's usually something that is likely to come back. Okay, it doesn't just go away. Depression. If somebody knows that they have had a bout of depression and they're likely to have another one, they really have to do a lot of different things to make sure that they're not going to fall into this again. And they need the support systems more, not less. And what ends up happening very often, unfortunately, mental illness is people get less support, don't pay attention to it, deny it because of this reason. So I really feel that any time a person is, if you sense it in your husband, if you sense it in a child, if you sense it in your mother-in-law, if you sense it in somebody, being supportive. You know, this is something that happens. This is an illness like other illnesses that Hashem sends. There's nothing that you did to cause it. There's nothing, you know, and we're going to deal with it. And we're going to help you. And we're going to help you get through this. And we're going to get through this together if it's your spouse. And hopefully, if it's yourself, the ability to get people who will be supportive if it's a child. Okay? It becomes even more complicated because also you don't want to talk to people because years later and shidduchim, and there is a privacy issue and you don't want to make things public, and I'm not saying to make things public, but I am saying that it's really important to have people to speak to and to get the help and to get the support you need. I want to talk also that it's hard enough to have to be embarrassed. So people, first of all, there's that like embarrassment people feel. Second of all, the actual behaviors are really hard to deal with. It is very hard to deal with a spouse. It's hard when your spouse is depressed. It's hard if your spouse has bipolar. It's what?
Snap out of it.
Right. No, it's hard. If you have a difficult child, whether it be ADHD, any special needs child, okay, it is really, really hard. And people, instead of getting support, what I find happens, okay, is that people get a lot of advice, a lot of people that don't want their kids playing with that kid, a lot of like, this is a bad family, we're not interested in that family, something must be wrong with the family if this is what's going on, okay? I want to tell you, there was an article, and I didn't bring it, but if anybody can have this, it's called The Trouble with Ari, and it was in the Mishpacha, it was like an Aleph and a Mitzvah. Do you remember that article? It was unbelievable. This is somebody whose kid must have had ADHD before, but the part that struck me was at the end when she said, you know, if I had a kid that was sick in the hospital, everybody would have come, my whole family, they would have made meals for me, they would have sent babysitters, they would have sent help. But because I have this child, nobody wants to help me. They don't send their kids, they don't send their babysitters, they don't give me help. They, like, ostracize me. And then she writes, it was like really, it was unbelievable because she writes, you know, and if my son finally gets it together and he makes it to shul, which is so hard for him, like, why do people have to comment on his clothes and what he's doing and come up to my husband? And, like, and that really is what it's like when you have a special needs child. You know, like, instead of people saying, and I always say this, instead of people saying, wow, this person has a special needs child or a special needs situation or a difficult situation in the house, and look how amazing they're dealing with it, which is what somebody should be saying to them. Wow, your husband's depressed or he hasn't, you know, or he has, or there's something going on, you know, like, you're doing a great job holding it up and taking care of it, you know, like, That's I admire you for doing that. I think it's amazing that you're able to keep the house going, keep, like, you know, if the husband is suffering from something, rather than people saying, oh, something's going on, and, you know, genetic, and, you know, being able to go to the person and say, like, you know, you're doing a great job, you're keeping it together, and you're really doing the best you can to help this person, and that's really an amazing thing. That's the kind of support. Those are the kinds of things. Okay? How can I help you? What would be helpful? Okay?
That means that you really need to educate the public.
It's not. First, we have to always start with educating ourselves.
Okay. So.
Okay.
And you're educating us.
Right. I mean, again, this is a right. But I'm just saying, this is okay. This is, look. If it were up to me, and I have. You know, when Rabbi Elsie was telling us about the dreamers, like, I'm a person that has a lot of dreams of vision. You know, like, I imagined this kind of conference more than 7 years ago, okay? So, like, but till this, you know, till last year's conference happened and this year's, you know, but again, I don't have $1 million in the day, but this is one of the things that I personally would work for if I could as a public. I really feel that this is one of the areas where in the firm community we are not helping ourselves, and we are not giving ourselves enough support and enough support for people who are in these situations. But as a person,
a lot of chaburas all over the place. Make them aware of it, and then they can put it into the program.
That's a really good idea. Okay, let me just, I just want to end with this, and then I would like to open for discussions. Like, you know, same thing, like, you know, if somebody's, you know, because, and very often, like Sarah's telling me, she had a very unusual situation with a child who suddenly started to, who basically freaked out in school. You know, kid who, like, she didn't know had symptoms, whatever, and then started, like, having, like, massive misbehavior in school. So she said it was unbelievable because people called her, she didn't even knew her, and started to tell her what to do. Like, they didn't even ask, oh, like, I heard, you know, it would be, I could hear somebody call and say, you know, my son called and said that, you know, Yessi, you know, really freaked out in school today, and, you know, whatever, and I heard that that happened, and can I offer some help, and is there anything I can do to help you, right? But, like, or even what happened, you know, do you know what happened, right? The person started to call and tell her, you know, all kinds of, you know, all kinds of things, and it was totally not relevant to what the situation was. Okay, so again, just learning how to be sensitive when we're trying to help people in this situation. Okay, I just want to say one other thing about this. Every situation that Hashem sends us, and this is where I started, you know, our talk, is something that's there to help us grow and develop. So people who have been through depression or bipolar and have been treated properly and have come out of it and have the ability to help other people do an amazing thing. You grow, also for mental illness, from any illness. We'll have people talk about illnesses. People who have overcome depression have learned a lot about themselves. People who overcome mental illness have learned or are dealing with their own mental illnesses. They have a lot that they're dealing with and they're learning about themselves and they're growing and they have strengths. Okay, and you know, there's somebody I meant to ask Hadass the name of the organization, because NITSA, in Eretz Yisrael, there's an organization called NITSA. It's a postpartum depression. It's an amazing organization, and the woman who started it is a woman who suffered from severe postpartum depression, and did not get help right away. First of all, didn't even realize she had it her first pregnancy. Got it her second pregnancy. Big adult, knew nothing about it. Took a long time till they got help, for whatever reason, and she has gotten over it, and she created this organization to help other women who have postpartum depression and to raise in the Frum community in Eretz Yisrael. She has done unbelievable, unbelievable work, okay? I just want to say that when we have to take care of a child, a husband, in those situations, again, finding somebody who is sympathetic and understands. And again, it's hard because if a person isn't dealing with that kind of situation, it's hard for them. You know, it's hard to, if your husband's functioning and you have to understand when your friend calls you up and says, you know, and he didn't get out of bed again today and there's no money and it's so hard to be that empathetic listening ear and really hear it and really get it. Or like when people have children that are difficult, really being able to empathize and hear and be that person. Or even for ourselves, find, if we need it, find that person who doesn't judge us, doesn't criticize us, doesn't give us etza. And it doesn't always have to be somebody who's etza. It could be somebody who just gives us support and chizuk. You know, like I had a friend, she was going through a really hard time, and she would just call me up sometimes and say, coffee. And I'd say, yeah. And we'd go out for coffee. We'd like get her out of the house, out of the situation, just go for coffee and like have a good time and talk. And she could talk to me. Okay? That's also like very helpful. People need that. And again, very often what happens is because also it's so time consuming, the person's so time consuming, it's like, it's hard to get yourself out of that situation. If you're dealing with that kind of situation, you sometimes need to just go out and have a cup of coffee, go out for a swim, take that extra taking care of yourself so that you can take care of the person you're taking care of. Okay? And it's very important to recognize that we learn when we have those challenges, whether it's our husband or our children or our parents that are getting older and suffering from one of these things, that these things teach us patience, unconditional love, and unconditional giving, which really makes us like Hashem. That's what Hashem does. Hashem gives us unconditional giving, unconditional love. He has tremendous amount of patience with us. And it really develops things in us. You know, like I said to somebody, it's really easy to love your husband when he gives you flowers and he's doing well and he's successful and you feel so proud of him and blah, blah, blah. It's a lot harder to be loving and supportive to your husband when he's out cold in the bed or he has bipolar and he lashes out at you and, you know, and things like that, right? It's very easy to love those well-behaving children who do really great in school and are those nachas children. It's a lot harder. Okay, it's a lot harder to love the child, though, that really, like, it feels like we'll never give us nachas. We'll never be that child. Okay, we'll always be that child we're going to have to take care of or be struggling with. Okay? And that's what I have to say about it, is that it really helps us develop. And now what I'd like to do is send that back to you, and then I'd like to open up the